Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining me today is Stephen Paskoff, the author of the book Civility Rules, A New Business Approach for Boosting Results and Cutting Risk. Stephen is a former trial attorney for the EEOC and partner in a nationally known labor and employment law firm. He left private practice to help organizations increase workplace trust, address uncivil behaviors, and help clients comply with workplace requirements. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Adam. My pleasure to be here.
So let's start out with the book. I have to say I've been enjoying reading it. What led you to write it in the first place?
I wanted to put down a point of view about the way I felt that compliance and related issues should be handled. And I wanted to organize it in a way that would focus on the importance of values and behavior, provide anecdotes, and in a sense, a roadmap as to how to approach this in the day-to-day organizational real world. And a book seemed like the best way to do it.
Well, you've certainly done a great job doing that. And I have to say, I'm very sympathetic to the main thesis of the book. There's too much uncivility, I think, that we see, and it definitely is disruptive. And you wrote something very interesting, and I'm quoting, "The path from the merely disruptive to outright abusive behavior is a well-traveled route to illegal actions." It's certainly something that's intuitively true. Do you have some good examples that you can share of that?
Sure. Quite often what you'll have is when I've seen it in manufacturing, I've seen it in financial services. I've seen it in the pharmaceutical world. I've seen it in government, just about every industry. You can have an environment where minor infractions that are behavioral, people ignore them, don't speak up, don't make a big deal. And over time, they escalate. And when they're not addressed, they become, in essence, more or less accepted the way things are done, even though there are standards that say they shouldn't be. And the path quite often starts in what we call the civil treatment triangle, with rude and unprofessional behavior that's ignored, that can then become unwelcoming, unjust, abusive, or bullying. And it's an easy leap, and sometimes it goes right to the top into illegal behavior.
So, as you mentioned, there's a triangle, there's a continuum there. You know, what's a sign that things are starting to get beyond just a little bit of rudeness, but into, real danger areas?
Well, I want to, if I can, turn the question around. And quite often the way that people in compliance, I think, look at this is they'll look to see the level of illegal activity. How many complaints did we have that are verified? That is surely important. But often what's just as important is how many charges do we have that are not validated, that are not accepted, because that can be an extraordinarily important danger signal that's often overlooked because people say, well, nothing illegal happened. If you take a look at the behavioral issues, for example, in discrimination, a major compliance issue, if you take a look at stats, you'll see that in the federal government and private enterprise, maybe only 4% of charges are found to have illegal behavior. The other 96%, though, are on that road quite often to not just incivility, but part of incivility at the top, which is illegality. And when you have a lot of people complaining, what it typically means is not they're all making things up. They may not be able to prove a case that's a violation, but you're on the road to it and you're causing business harm, even when the behavior doesn't cross into illegality.
It's interesting point you're making, because in some ways this starts touching on the ethics mandate that already is one that compliance professionals have, correct?
Yes, but often that tends to get focused with greater emphasis on the law alone, and my point is they should be looked at in a blended continuum.
Okay, so what are some steps compliance officers can take to try and help move either an organization towards a more civil one or to ensure that you know, when uncivil behavior starts creeping into the workplace, something's done about it?
Well, there are a few things. First, what I'd like to do is explain what my point of view of a civil workplace in our language, it's just our language. When we talk about it, we're talking about what we call a civil treatment workplace. And the definition that I have, I think, will explain or help me explain and answer your question. In our world, a civil treatment workplace is one where you are able to get the best people doing the best work individually in teams, where you use your values and standards to also make sure that, in addition to what I said, you find out about ideas and you find out about problems. For that to work, the organization has got to recognize that compliance behavior, and that includes stuff that leads you on the road to illegality, quite often will have a harmful impact on business, whether or not an actual compliance violation arises. One thing that I think compliance officers have to do is to have a wider array of concerns than the focus of the law, because that's what gets business people involved. When they can see potentials of lack of productivity, lack of finding out about safety issues, loss of engagement, focus, talent, and the like, that helps them focus on the overall issue. What can compliance leaders do? I think the most important thing they can do is to get the commitment and focus of senior business leaders who say, I own this issue, and my compliance team is going to be an integral part in making this happen. But leaders cannot divorce the issue, in my view, if you want to affect behavior and ultimately culture, unless they own it personally, not just organizationally.
Interesting, because, you know, there's two things that I see going on here. One is just the actual practical business application, but it's another way to sort of address the issue of tone at the top. I mean, it's not just the tone of them saying that they're going to own it, but it's actually the tone in which they work and comport themselves, as well as those who report to them, correct?
Correct. But if I may add this, or I'll say, and their tone at the top, what they say, how they model values, how they talk about it, how they hold people accountable, how they welcome issues, concerns, and topics, which is extraordinarily important, is, as you said, correct. I agree with that. It's just not sufficient. The tone has got to not only start at the top, but it's got to move through the entire organization in a sincere behavioral way. And the thing that I found is if you talk about behaviors that link to values, Adam, you can ask the CFO, how much will it cost us if people will tell others that they really want to hear about problems? How much will it cost us if they will listen? How much will they cost us if they avoid certain behaviors? And the good news is, the typical answer from very cautious CFOs is, not a dollar. The point, though, is the benefits can be extraordinarily huge and positive.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate here on one thing. You know, as we talk about sincerity, people like honesty in the abstract, but when you're face-to-face with someone, sometimes it's very hard to be honest with them. There's, you know, some feel it's not really civil to give someone a hard message that they're wrong. People are hesitant to tell managers, you know, their boss, that they're doing something wrong, or speak out about another, or go over their head. You also just have the same issue. I mean, we've all 1,000 times said, boy, if I ever meet that guy face to face, I'm going to tell him this, that, and the other thing. And then when you are face to face, it's hard to do it. What would you say to someone with that hesitation? You know, how do you be honest and tell hard truths in an environment where you're still preserving civility, and that civility doesn't necessarily get in the way of that?
Well, to me, it goes back to the definition that we talked about just a few minutes ago. In what I'm calling, again, a civil treatment workplace, if your goal is to have the best people, which is the front end of the equation, doing the best work individually in teams, then you have to have an agreement that that means we are going to insist on fair standards of performance, and we're going to talk bluntly and directly and candidly. Now, the way you communicate difficult messages needs to be civil. It doesn't mean you're insulting, screaming, yelling, demeaning, etc. But being factual and candid is part of the bargain, in my view. And it's part of the way that you get the kind of workplace that I mentioned at the outset.
Yeah, it's a great counsel, and I think an interesting topic. And frankly, I wish there was more discussion about it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, from my own personal career where I've seen a lack of civility, not necessarily lead to a compliance violation, but it's made the place, the workplace, a lot more difficult and harder for people to come in, harder for them to be their best. And I think there's an interesting opportunity here, as you pointed out, for compliance really to take a role in not only ensuring the integrity of the organization, but preserving the productivity of it. So, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. Again, for those of you listening, the book is Civility Rules, A New Business Approach for Boosting Results and Cutting Risks. Stephen, thank you for joining us, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Adam.